I reached Paul's voicemail. I'm unable to come to my phone right now. Leave me a message, and I'll get back to you as soon as possible. Thank you.
Here's a message. The Twins suck. Welcome to episode 134 of the Talk to Contact podcast. This is the draft recap episode, and we're going to have Jeremy Nygaard from TwinsDaily.com and formerly of the Twins Hangout podcast. But for now, it's just the two originals, the OGs, E-Rolf and the Baseball Pirate. Brother, what's shaking?
Well, you know, I'm just hanging out. Living the dreams down in California, in the Bay Area. Currently sitting outside and observing some beer league softball games going on across the street from me.
Now, you're in the Bay Area. Does that mean you're moved into your place now, or you're at training still?
Both of those are correct. I'm currently going to be training until the end of the month, but I just signed a lease on a new apartment last weekend. So the wife, while I'm at training, is in charge of making sure all of our goods get moved and our apartment gets set up down in the Bay Area.
But you're in the Bay Area.
Well, I'm an hour north, so.
Gotcha.
Not really available to help her out.
In the grand scheme of all things California, you're near the Bay Area.
Yes, I am.
And you seem like you've lived in most of the largest states now, except for Texas. In terms of,
yep,
like,
and I have
states that have a maximum span from one tip of the state to the next.
Yes, and I have no desire to move to Texas at this time or probably ever.
But you could get a sweet belt buckle, partner.
No.
No? How's my Texas accent? Pretty good?
Needs a lot of work.
Needs a lot of
work. You don't have nearly enough twang in it.
Well, okay. I don't know. Maybe we should just talk about baseball. I'm pretty decent at that.
Okay.
So, the Twins, the draft, I mean, they drafted 40 guys this week, and Jeremy Nygaard is going to tell us all about that. And so that's maybe the big news, and we'll just start the Twins with their first overall pick. They selected Tyler J, who is a reliever, a hard-throwing reliever. I think he throws 97 or thereabouts. But they drafted him 6th overall, and they're hoping to make him into a starting pitcher, not this year, but next year, or maybe in the future. I guess see how things go. Just quickly, and we'll have Jeremy give us the full deal, but what did you think about this?
Well, it's an interesting pick. He has been a reliever at the University of Illinois Champaign-Urbana, where he's been pitching for the last couple of years. But he's been primarily used as kind of like putting out fires, more of a swingman. You know, he's not going in just pitching a couple of batters or one at a time. You know, he consistently goes out and pitches, you know, up to three innings. So he's pitched quite a few innings for a college reliever. I think he has like 60-some innings on the books this year, which in major league terms is almost a whole season for some relievers. So it's an interesting pick to go college reliever that early in the draft. And the other Twins are planning on letting him try to work out as a starter next season when he gets in. But at the same time, drafting a guy that can throw the ball 97 miles an hour and knows where it's going, he's got three good pitches. So, I mean, there's a lot to like. There's a lot of upside here.
All right. Well, we'll break that down a little bit. But so there's all those transactions, the draft happened, all that kind of crap. And then the Twins did a bunch of stuff with the roster this week. So early this week, they sent Danny Santana packing. He's now in AAA. And they brought up the big bopper, Kenny Vargas. And Vargas had a pretty good stint down there in AAA. This was Vargas' first taste of AAA pitching ever, as he was called up directly from AA last year. And he hit very, very well down in AAA. It sounds like he got a few things figured out, and Santana on the opposite end of the spectrum continued to struggle and kind of spiral out of control this year. It's almost as if what he was doing last year wasn't sustainable, and he maybe got into some bad habits, and then when the balls weren't finding the grass between players this year, all of a sudden those bad habits didn't help him out, and but he had two walks and about 100 plate appearances or something like that, and now he's down in AAA trying to figure it out.
Yeah, and this was a move that that I think was a long time coming for Twins fans. I think those who are watching the games more closely probably may have been looking for this to happen a little bit sooner. We heard Paul Molitor when he was speaking on it, I don't know, about a week before the move. He was very tentative to say anything about Danny Santana and what their future plans were. And I think this is going to be important for Santana's long-term development. If he can go down to AAA, get some of that confidence back, start putting the ball in play a little bit more, maybe be a little bit more patient. So when he does use those contact skills, he's able to get on base, use his speed. But, I mean, we all knew that this was coming. If anyone has listened to the podcast last season, heard us all season talking about how we're waiting and waiting and waiting for the bubble to burst. I feel like if Danny Santana can get a little bit of confidence back, it wouldn't be unrealistic to expect him to be hitting 250, 260 with, hopefully an on-base percentage 300 to 330 in there, which from a shortstop, you can probably accept that. But with Danny Santana, we weren't even getting good defense. He was playing terrible defense on the field, looked terrible going to his left up the middle of the field. And hopefully, Eduardo Escobar, who hasn't been doing much better than Danny Santana offensively, I think only has two walks himself, at least he's going to give you more solid everyday defense there. And that'll help these Twins pitchers who we've seen, as the season progresses, are still not striking out a lot of guys, still putting a lot of balls in play.
And it seemed like maybe the Twins weren't going to be happy with Eduardo Escobar giving them defense at second base, because later that same week, the Twins then called up Jorge Polanco, and Eddie Rosario was moved on the paternity list. And this ended up just being a couple of days for Rosario, going down, having a kid, coming right back, and Polanco was kind of up and down, but he had a start at shortstop, and you weren't really sure what was going to happen there, if they were going to try and keep Polanco on this roster and then, move a pitcher around or something like that when Rosario came back. But again, this is the second year in a row then the Twins have had Polanco at some point in the season on the Major League roster. And Polanco is a guy that the reports out of the minors are that he doesn't have a strong arm. And as a result, he's rushing a lot of throws. And he's making a lot of errors, generally the throwing errors. And so maybe he doesn't quite have the arm for shortstop. I think when the Twins called him up, he had already had like 14 errors on the season, or it was at least 12 that he had had so far. So he was maybe struggling a little bit mentally and wasn't having those smooth mechanics because he was rushing throws trying to compensate. But he came up and played decent ball for the Twins, and then Rosario came right back and Polanco was up and down. So, Paul, did you have a chance to see Polanco? I know you watched a couple of games here this week, and what did you think of him?
I didn't get a chance to see him. I watched a little bit of one game on my cell phone, so, on as much as you can tell from a 4-inch screen.
I believe that's the primary scouting tool.
Say again?
I believe that's the primary scouting tool, is the 4-inch screen.
Yeah, it's pretty much the best way to make any kind of advanced declarations about a player, is seeing him, 6 pixels high. I can't really say anything about the way he looked, though. But we saw when he came up in his brief time last season, we saw he was able to get some hits and make some noise offensively against Major League pitching, and we saw that again this year. So, the bat's there. I mean, if he can't stick at shortstop, eventually Brian Dozier is, he's not going to be the second baseman in Minnesota forever. So there is an avenue for him. I don't think Dozier will block him forever. So if he has to move off of shortstop, I think that Polanco has enough bat in his system that if he can stay in the infield, he can continue to be productive.
And the Twins seem to be happy enough with mediocre defense at shortstop, so if he hits a little bit, it'd be perfectly fine to keep him there. Dozier did sign that 3-year quote-unquote extension this winter that cost me a fucking helmet, Nacho. So there is that. He's going to be here for a few more years. So then again, more transactions. Michael Tonkin is back with the big leagues club. I think this is officially, what, his third time with the big league club? He's been up and down and up and down this year a bunch.
Yeah,
but
and he hasn't had a chance yet to really get up, stay up, and stick with the major league bullpen. And I think even more important than bringing Michael Tonkin up is the other side of that move, sending Tim Stauffer, where they designated him for assignment. He's just been terrible this season. I think he's given up like 11 runs in 9 innings or something like that. Just has not been able to get it done. Then he had that injury, and when he came back, he's just more of the same. So Stauffer's fastball velocity, I think, was down almost 2 miles per hour from last season. And then you add in the tax that a pitcher experiences of moving from the friendly confines of Petco Park to Minnesota's Target Field for half your games. And although I think Target Field still plays a little bit pitcher-friendly, it's much closer to the league average. And Tim Stauffer just hasn't been able to get it done. And so more than I am excited to see Michael Tonkin, I'm glad to not see Tim Stauffer.
Yeah, and Stauffer, I don't believe that anyone else is going to claim him. And so he's going to probably end up in AAA and find a way to continue to collect the rest of that $2.2 million that the Twins owe him. But, you know, I don't think he's back in a Twins uniform this year. And Stauffer's entire time with the Twins was kind of cursed. I don't know if you remember, we were all puzzled when the Twins signed him this winter. We thought, oh, it's $2 million, big whoop. If he comes up and he's serviceable, you know, that's a win. But right away in spring training, he just got absolutely rocked from the get-go. And there was talk, well, maybe he won't even make this team. Maybe the Twins are just going to eat the $2 million from the start. But then he found a way to make the roster and found a way to continually let the Twins down. I mean, he wasn't a guy that the Twins ever trusted or looked to in difficult spots. And, you know, he would have a couple of good outings here or there, and then all of a sudden he would shit the bed. So, you know, so long, good riddance for now. I mean, the Twins are in a tough skid right now. Michael Tonkin's going to come up. He's going to be an upgrade to that bullpen. The bullpen hasn't really been an issue lately. You know, they've continued to do well there with that bullpen, especially in 7th, 8th, and 9th innings when they've got some of those 6-plus inning starts from their starters. And the starters are going well. The bullpen's going well. So not a lot of issues there. But, you know, certainly it would be nice to have Tonkin up. It sounds like this should be an extended stay here. I was a little bit surprised that, you know, Ryan Pressly wasn't a guy that the Twins looked to move, but as bad as Stauffer has been, certainly can't fault them making that move at all. I don't know. The Twins overall, they're making all these moves. It seems like they're trying to fit pieces in here and there, and I don't know how much of that do you think is related to what has happened to the Twins over the last 10 games. So they're... Twins are 3-7 in June. You know, they just got swept by the Royals. Frustration is running high. I mean, do you think the Twins are tinkering with the roster here to try and fill some of those holes that maybe they were happy to let go while they were winning? Or what is this? I mean, do you think Molitor was reluctant to do something?
This is more about these players have just been ineffective. And it's not just about the fact that they've lost 5 of their last 6 and they're tinkering, because we saw when the season started and they didn't know even how to score any runs. They didn't mess with the roster then. You know, they didn't send Blaine Boyer down when he started the season terrible. They let him give a chance to turn it around. And so I think this is just, Tim Stauffer just hasn't been able to get it done. Danny Santana was given a chance to succeed, and he just hasn't got it done. And for Danny Santana, I think it's more about his development as a player and trying to make sure that he's not doesn't just lose his skills and doesn't become mentally defeated. But for Tim Stauffer, he didn't have it. And they gave him a shot. I think, you know, they sent him on a DL. They let him come back and give him another shot again, which is probably more than I thought he deserved as a fan, but probably just doing their due diligence by the organization. So I don't think they're tinkering. You know, this team has given back some of those wins that they were able to steal out early, but you know, they're still in contention in the AL Central, and unless they continue to be just, you know, lose 5 out of 6 of their next, you know, 6 again, they're still going to stay within contention in the division, and we're still going to have hopefully competitive baseball as we go into the summer.
Well, the Twins' schedule doesn't get a lot easier here over the rest of June either. I mean, these Twins are going to play a lot of very good teams here over the next, you know, 3 or 4 weeks, so they're going to get a little bit of a break here. They're going to play 3 games against the Rangers, and the Rangers have struggled. But then they get the Cardinals, they get the Cubs. You know, after that, they got the Brewers, who they seemingly couldn't do anything with last weekend. They dropped 2 out of 3.
Right, but just like we saw at the beginning of the season when the Twins just could not get hits at all, again, we're seeing the offense that's floundering. The starting pitching and the bullpen, as you mentioned earlier, are doing their jobs. I mean, we saw Trevor May go out there the other day, and despite giving up a first inning run and working his pitch count up, pitched 6 innings, a run, 1 ball, handed over to the bullpen, gave up 1 additional run, but the Twins were shut out offensively. And so it's really more about the hitting. And early in the season and during all that winning, the Twins were getting those timely hits with runners in scoring position with 2 outs. They're finding a way to get those runs in, and right now they're not clustering those hits like that, and so they're just not getting hits at all, really, and so they can't score runs. So it doesn't matter how good the pitching staff is, if his bats start to turn it around, it's just not going to be successful. I mean, Trevor Plouffe's very cold this month. Torrey Hunter. I mean, it's just across the board. No one has really been hitting since the calendar turned to June, and you can't win a baseball game if you don't score any runs.
Yeah, and they're frustrated right now. So, Paul, Torrey Hunter was kind of epitomized the frustration yesterday night. So he got a couple of what he thought were bad calls from the home plate ump, and it sounded like Kyle Gibson maybe thought like he was not necessarily being squeezed, but that perception is out there. And Torrey Hunter,
yeah, I mean, the last strike before he got thrown out of the game was definitely off the plate. And then he had a few words to say to the home plate umpire, Paul Molitor, and then Torrey Hunter got a quick hook there, got called, got thrown out of the game. Paul Molitor came out. He got thrown right away too. Torrey Hunter then went on to have what will likely become a classic Torrey Hunter meltdown. Takes off his, you know, half of his uniform, throws his jersey on the field, and leaves the bat boy to go around and clean up the mess. I like to see that passion, that excitement from the team. That's something that on this podcast we've talked about in years past. They don't have that spark, that energy, really that edge. And so to see that and to see Molly out there and get his first ejection as a manager, I like to see that. That's a good thing. And it's coming at the right time with the team struggling right now. So I like to see that. I don't know how much of Torrey's explosion was just him wanting to just kind of make that statement there, because it looked like he was ready to leave the field, and then some, just a little flip, you know, switch tripped or something, and he lost it, and he put on a good show for the fans.
Yeah, I don't know. I am not a fan of the yard sale, you know, taking his stuff off, throwing it all over the place, and I think you can be a fan of guys having passion and energy and maybe having a little bit swagger and still not be a fan of what Torrey Hunter did. You know, sure, he's passionate. Sure, get thrown out, argue with the umpire. But then to start throwing your crap all over, taking your shirt off, taking your jersey off, throwing that around, I don't know. I mean, at that point, you're just doing it to get a rise out of people. And certainly,
yeah,
baseball
but,
is entertainment,
this,
but
this is an entertainment business, and you've been calling for so long. You want to see this excitement, this edge, this attitude, and so when you get it, even if it's over the top, you can't just willy nilly it. I mean, you want it all the way. You
turn
have to take the good with the bad.
Get your piece out there, say what you got to say, and then go back to your dugout. I mean, this is a 39-year-old man acting
like
a 4-year-old.
This isn't happening every day. This is part of baseball. This is part of the fun of baseball. I mean, being out in Seattle and seeing some Lloyd McClendon meltdowns, he's one of my favorite managers to watch this day, because when you watch, when he gets up and he gets animated, I mean, he starts throwing things. There's a video of him when he was with the Pirates, when he picked up the base and was throwing the base around. I love that kind of thing. That's fun, and I don't want to see that worked its way out of baseball, and I'd love to see that energy from Toriano.
I don't know. I maybe like it more when it's not a guy on the team that I root for. If it would have, I mean, it didn't even feel like he was doing it because he was so angry. It just feels like he was just doing it because, oh, let's see what other dumb shit I can do right now. You know, like,
well, I don't know what you want from him, Eric. You don't want the guys to be quiet and not show that emotion, and when they show it and they get carried away, you don't like that either. So you're kind of all over the place willy-nilly, and I think that if you want the energy, but just accept it when it happens.
That was a guy just being stupid to be stupid, right? He could turn around, get frustrated, get angry, get tossed,
it's not like we've ever accused Torii Hunter of being the smartest guy around. So let's just let Torii be Torii, okay? I'd love to have, if Manny Ramirez was on the Twins when he was doing what he was doing out in Boston, I would have loved that too. I mean, just let him do it. Let him do his thing. And hopefully that energy is infectious.
Well, I mean, he's going to do his thing. I mean, I'm not stopping him. I can't stop him. I don't have the power to do that. But it just, it rubbed me the wrong way in terms of how long it went on and how it just, I didn't care for it. I was fine with him turning around, arguing the calls. I know they're frustrated because the team has been going so poorly, but just felt like it went not just out of control, but just totally off the rails. And you know, part of that is the offense has been really bad. You know, I mean, we look at what the Twins have done recently, and it's been bad. Paul, you mentioned they've lost 5 of their last 6. They haven't scored a lot of runs. I mean, they scored 2 versus the Royals. They were shut out the night before that. They scored a run the game before that. They won 2-0 against the Brewers, and they scored 2 in a loss before that. You know, back before that, they lost a 10-5 game that they were never in. You know, I mean, this team, in a week, essentially hasn't done anything that they can get excited about. You know, I mean, the one run was a 2-0 win against a terrible Brewers team, and they really didn't ever feel like they were clicking. So, I mean, certainly they're frustrated. They're sure they're going to take advantage of the off day today, get some of that out of their system, relax, travel down to Arlington, have some barbecue, get some beef ribs, some brisket, whatever you got to do down there. You know, and tomorrow night, Friday night, be ready to play some baseball. And, I mean, this is still a Twins team that's, what, 7 games above 500? You know, I mean, they're going to still be okay, and we're still in the land of Twins bonus baseball. You know, everything they're doing right now is great, because they could just as easily be 7 games under 500, and half the people in Minnesota would have stopped caring already. So we can enjoy it what it is, but certainly, you know, for everything that was going right before, it's not going right now. You know, Joe Mauer is struggling. Everybody is struggling. Trevor Plouffe was kind of a guy that for a long time, for a couple of weeks there, he was really driving the offense, and he's in a big-time slump, and there's not any power coming through the middle of that order. They're not getting on base. The Twins we talked about last week, they're kind of clumping hits together and scoring runs in bunches, and now it's not like they're not getting on base. They're just, they don't have the timely hit. They're not driving that run in. And so they're kind of coming apart at the seams, kind of the things that a lot of us have been saying, oh, here they go again. Just wait. They're going to go back in the tank. And now they're kind of finally getting there, so we can't be too surprised. But it's definitely disappointing to see the Twins do that.
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned earlier, they're just not getting those timely hits, and I'm not really sure what you can do about that. These guys are professionals that are going out there, and hopefully the off day today, you know, clear their heads, go down to Arlington, and, you know, baseball's been known to fly around down there, so maybe they can get some swagger back hitting in that warm Texas air.
Yeah, so, I mean, we'll just, to kind of illustrate how bad this offense has been, we'll look at the hitter of the week candidates here. I mean, I think this will kind of give you an idea of what they've been doing or not doing. So Eduardo Escobar, who was 5-for-17, had a double, a triple, and 2 RBI. So a good week for Escobar, but 17 at-bats doesn't mean that you're getting a lot of playing time. Brian Dozier was 7-for-26, so 2 extra base hits and 3 walks. And then Eddie Rosario was 6-for-26. So this is the best that you can get on your team right now. We're essentially saying guys that hit a little bit better than 250 all of a sudden are here. Guys have a little bit of power, a couple extra base hits, but none of these numbers impress me. I mean, Escobar's 5-for-17 is probably the best line with a couple extra base hits. And I mean, I don't know. Dozier, sure, a home run and a double. It seems like he does that just about every week now, though. So, I mean, he's not exciting me. Rosario, 2 doubles and a home run. That's pretty good. But, you know, again, 6-for-24. That doesn't, you know, and no walks. So, you know, when you're not getting on base, you're not in the. Ugh.
If you just want to go with the straight metrics, I mean, you have to like what Escobar did in his limited playing time, and now we're going to start seeing him out there every day for the next couple of weeks. And so I guess it'd be a toss-up between Escobar and Rosario, but Escobar has done just as much in about two-thirds of the appearances. So I think you got to go there. And again, that 5 hits in a week, I mean, when you're talking about that's the guy you're going to be selected as your hitter of the week, it just kind of speaks to the ineptitude of the offense over the past calendar week.
Yeah, I think, for me, I would probably pick Rosario. And, I mean, he missed a couple games of paternity leave, but 6-for-24 and 2 doubles and a home run, that's actually, you know, if we can get that out of Rosario, if he can hit 250 and slug 450, you know, I'll take that from him. He's going to play pretty good defense out there. I like that. So, I don't know. I'm giving my vote to the new father, Eddie Rosario. And since there's just two of us this week, and I'm the eldest twin, that's good enough for a tie break to me. Eddie Rosario, champion, hitter of the week.
Okay.
I like that tiebreaker.
I'm not sure that I'm a big fan of it, but sometimes you gotta agree to disagree.
As a military man, you have to respect seniority.
I suppose you do. Now, what about pitcher of the week? I know we had a good showing by J.R. Graham. We got his first start. Trevor May, as I talked about earlier in the issue, who are our candidates for this week's pitcher of the week?
Yeah, so J.R. Graham got that first start, 7 innings, 1 earned run, 4 strikeouts, and no walks. So pretty nice out of him. Trevor May, 6 innings, 1 earned run, hit 5 strikeouts, but he had 3 walks and threw a lot of pitches there. Out of the bullpen, Casey Fiend, 2 1/3 scoreless with a strikeout and just 2 hits. So not super great. I think in the bullpen, a bunch of guys had a couple of ups and downs, and as I mentioned, they kind of struggled a little bit in that Brewers game where they gave up 10 runs, and so that kind of put some funk in some of those bullpen stats that we're looking at. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, the Twins have been getting good starts out of them, and don't forget just barely a week ago what Mike Pelfrey did, and obviously, we gave him the award for what he did in his most recent start, but he seems to have kind of put some things together. But for me, J.R. Graham to go out there, and the Twins really needed a guy because they were talking about maybe throwing a bullpen game. So to have J.R. Graham go out there and give you 7 innings of 1-run ball, I'll take that from anybody, anytime. And when the Twins are struggling, that's a pretty good thing to have.
I'm going to go with Trevor May, who, despite giving up a couple of hits in the first inning, And his pitch count was way up by the time he got into the fourth inning, and I thought for sure there'd no way that he'd be able to continue to be effective, but he stuck it out. Molitor trusted him, left him out there for six innings, only gave up that one first inning run, worked himself out of a couple of jams. And I really love the way he's progressing and the what he's showing when he gets into those pressure situations. Yes, he's still having some issues putting hitters away when he has two strikes, but we've seen, you know, in his 9 strikeout game that he's got the swing and miss stuff. And so I feel like, you know, as he gets more experience pitching at the major league level, hopefully his mistake pitches get fewer and far between, and those 0-2 counts can turn into strikeouts instead of doubles up the middle.
Yeah, he certainly battled. I mean, because the six innings, they weren't clean by any stretch. I mean, there was guys on base, even in the sixth inning when he was trying to get out of there, he gave up a single, then he walked the next guy, and, you know, looked like, well, Molly could come out at any time, and then he kind of, you know, found that reserve or, you know, put it together enough to get out of that inning unscathed. So, I mean, I like that. I'll cede to you here on Pitcher of the Week since I took the win there on Hitter of the Week. So, Trevor May, former podcast guest Trevor May, this week's Twins Pitcher of the Week. What do you think about that?
I like it. I like it. Sounds good.
All right. Well, that's pretty much all the Twins news from this week. It was pretty ugly. We tried to find some good stories in there. When we take a break here and put some Egons in your ear, and then we're going to be joined by Jeremy Nygaard to hear all about what the Twins did in this draft and to see maybe they topped last year's bet of drafting 47 college relievers. Stay tuned. Anyways, you're here to talk the draft.
Talk draft.
So, Jeremy, for what seems like now the third year in a row, the Twins are like, we want velocity, and we don't care how we get it. And we also want college arms because all of our pitchers suck. So we're getting hard-throwing relievers. And the Twins went the top of the draft, and we've got Tyler J., hard-throwing super reliever from the University of Illinois.
I mean, you can call him that if you want. I don't know that when we did the KFAN thing, I told Bonus, I said, stop calling him relief pitcher. Because college relief pitchers throw like 30 innings. And Tyler J threw like 70 innings. So, he didn't start games, but he had like the Illinois pitcher or the Illinois coaching staff must have just been like, hey, here's our best pitcher. Let's use him when we need our best pitcher. And if that's 3 innings at the end of the game, that's okay. You know what I mean? So,
sure.
You know, he fits the need of a high ceiling left-handed pitcher with the ceiling of like a number 2 starter. There's no left-handed pitcher in the organization. There's no relief pitcher in the organization with the ceiling as high as his, just because he has other pitches that he can throw. You know, the downfall might be that he's a little bit undersized, 6'1", 185 pounds. But this isn't comparable to the, well, Nick Birdie was going to be up in the majors last year. Well, there's a reason that Nick Birdie dropped out of the first round. Tyler J went 6th overall. He wasn't dropping anywhere. You know, he was going to go to the Rockies at one point. He was rumored to go number 1 overall. So, yeah, he fits that need of hard throwing guys. He fits that need of, he's a left-handed thrower. But there's a ceiling on him that's much higher than the, let's just take guys that throw hard.
So, I mean, it sounds like the Twins are going to send him down to Cedar Rapids, or somewhere down there. You know, maybe he makes a couple of appearances in Elizabethton before that. But then they're going to let him relieve for the rest of the year and then try and transition him into a starter role next year. Does that sound right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that there's a plan right now. It sounds like negotiations are going well and that he'll be under contract soon. I would guess when he signs, he'll end up down in Fort Myers and they'll do everything they need to do. And depending on the timing, he might do some short season stuff. We've been hearing a lot of Cedar Rapids, and that's possible. And I wouldn't be totally shocked if they just said, here, why don't you throw some for the miracle? And we'll go from there. Because the difference between low A and high A, isn't huge. I think that he's not like anybody the Twins have drafted in recent memory. A guy that doesn't have a ton of mileage on his arms and has a high ceiling. I think they're just going to kind of let him dictate, what happens. Obviously, if the Twins are in contention, they may press it a little bit more with him. But Cedar Rapids, that sounds like a good start, but I don't think we should just say, he's going to be at Cedar Rapids and maybe move up to Fort Myers. I don't think that's fair to cap it because, like I said, this is a pretty high ceiling dude.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is a guy that threw 60 innings. And so, 60 innings are 60 innings. So is this a case of the Twins are going to want to be a little bit cautious with him? But we're also, like you said, we're hearing, if the Twins are in contention, is this, Brandon Finnegan with the Royals last year? He could come up and help the Twins, but right. I think there's a lot of guys still ahead of Jay on the depth chart of other college relievers, other guys who have been close that maybe you'd call up before him, where I don't know that he'd be the first guy you'd think of there.
Right, and I think that's a fair point, but right now with Dunsing, you have to look at left-handed guys completely separate from right-handed guys. And there's Dunsing, there's Thompson, and then you look at the lack of quality left-handed pitchers in the system. Who's really next? Logan Darnell? Maybe Tyler Jay's next. So I think if you look at it if Brian Dunsing continues to not be very good, could Tyler Jay be in the conversation? He absolutely could be. And there's a conversation on Twins Daily, a thread. It was a couple weeks ago, and I suggested that Tyler Jay could be on the same path as Brandon Finnegan. And someone had commented that, well, let's figure out if he can throw back-to-back days. Let's figure out if he can go, whatever. And I looked up Finnegan's stats last year after he was drafted. The first time Brandon Finnegan threw back-to-back professionally was in the ALDS.
I guess my question about going the Brandon Finnegan route is if they actually intend for him to be a starter, are they willing to put him on the 40-man roster and start wasting option years already?
Okay, so basically, if Tyler Jay was added to the 40-man when he was called up, let's say August 1st, if he spends the rest of August on the active roster and then September, that wouldn't count as an option year. If they wanted to send him down at the beginning of 2016, they option him down. That's his first option year. And they can play that game not only in 2016 and 2017 and in 2018, but because he would have his three options done before his first five years of professional ball is done, he would get an extra option year, a fourth option year in 2019, which would mean he wouldn't be out of options until 2020. And at that point, to start the season off in 2020, where he's a, 25 at that point? I wouldn't be concerned about that at all. As a three-year guy out of college, the concern for me would be, how are we going to make a spot on the 40-man for him and keep him there, as opposed to, well, we're going to have to deal with his option years. And I think there's plenty of guys that you could just kind of jettison and get him on the 40-man. But that shouldn't be a concern at all when you add these guys fresh out of the draft, because that exception for that fourth option year, if you are out of options within 5 years, you get that extra one. I wouldn't worry about that at all. If he can help the team out this fall, later this summer, I would absolutely do it and not have any concern for his option years.
Okay, well, that makes sense. And I didn't know about that fourth option year. So yeah, once again, your expertise helps make that a little bit of a moot point, because hopefully, like you said, by the time he's 25, that he's at a place where either he's figured it out as a starter, or he's ready to pitch out of relief.
Right. And if you ever see dudes, especially international guys, that are added to the 40-man roster after their first year in full-season ball. So if you have guys that are added after their year at Cedar Rapids, like Kepler and Polanco were, they would qualify for that exception because they don't get enough service in the minor leagues playing short-season ball. So Kepler and Polanco, and it was like, dude, should they add them or not? You absolutely add those guys because it almost works out like a redshirt year. Where the next year, it's like their first option year, but they're going to get four. So you just keep them for that extra year. Obviously, you're giving up a 40-man spot, but Polanco and Kepler would both qualify for a fourth option year because of the timing of when they were added to the 40-man roster.
So, Jeremy, it's safe to say you like this Tyler J pick. And then also on the first day, the Twins went out and drafted another college arm, right-hander Kyle Cody. They took him in the competitive balance round, the second competitive balance round, 73rd overall. Cody was a starter at Kentucky, but this isn't a guy that has nearly the upside as Jay, right?
Well, I don't think there's the likelihood that he reaches the upside that Jay does. Kyle Cody throws really hard. Coming into this year, if you would have said Twins are drafting 6th and 73, they're getting Cody and they're getting Tyler J. Who goes where? People would have said Kyle Cody would go 6, Tyler J. would go 73. And that's just based on how good Kyle Cody had been in the Cape Cod League and how Tyler J. just kind of, you know, worked his way up. Cody was drafted out of high school, I want to say by the Phillies in like the 30th round, went to Kentucky. He's out of Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin, which is just down the road. And he... You know, he throws extremely hard. 97, I think I've been reading a lot of stuff lately, but I want to say one of the scouts that saw him told me he saw him at 99 at one point. So he's a guy that can certainly fill it up. The difference is he's a taller dude, keeping his mechanics right to repeat that delivery and do what he needs to do has been a little bit more difficult. If he had entered the draft last year, if that would have been allowed, he wouldn't have lasted until 73. But, you know, he didn't have a great year. He started to get it right, you know, more recently. But I think playing in the SEC and being a big body, I would guess he'll take the route where if and when he signs, he'll end up probably at Elizabethton and in Cedar Rapids. And it'll give him more time. But, you know, the Twins and that pipeline from Kentucky has been interesting. The upside to Kyle Cody, though, if he can figure it out, I wouldn't say it's less than Tyler J. I would just say the likelihood that he gets there is a little bit lower.
So,
and I got a question here. If he figures it out, does he have the opportunity to be the second best thing ever to come out of Chippewa Falls outside of Line and Kugel with beer?
I would think so, because I couldn't name a single other thing that came out of Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin.
Okay, so there you have it. Maybe he's already the second best thing that Chippewa Falls has ever produced.
And the interesting thing is, I mean, this is an aside, but the lady that I teach with in my class is from Chippewa Falls, and her family is actually pretty good friends with Kyle Cody's family. And after he left Chippewa Falls to go to Kentucky, his parents sold their family business and moved into the Lexington area to kind of follow him. So there's a lot of excitement in Chippewa because the family may be moving back into the area after, you know, he establishes himself. I think they'll probably follow him around a little bit. As it comes to signing, I think both of them will come in relatively easy. I would assume Jay will come in a little bit under budget. Cody might actually take a little bit more, maybe sign for slot, just because he was, you know, 7 months ago a guy that could have went 15. You know, he was a guy that I had thought, hey, if he goes number whenever the Twins are going to draft, we could maybe get him on a show just because I could get a connection to him. I never anticipated him being around at 73 until I was putting my 10-round mock together, and I said, hey, you know, he's a guy that I could see the Twins being interested in and definitely being around at that point. That would be an extremely good value pick at 73, and that's what happened.
So, Jeremy, tall guy, lots of velocity, maybe trouble throwing some strikes. Sounds like Alex Meyer.
It does. It absolutely does. And, you know, same high or college pitching coach. If that's what he becomes, if you use a second round pick on a guy that becomes what Alex Meyer, you know, could still become, and I'm not gonna lie about it, I don't think Alex Meyer's a starter anymore, but he could be a really good eighth inning guy. If you can get a guy that plays in the major leagues at 73 overall, you know, that's not a terrible job. But I still think he's got the ceiling of a, you know, number three, number four type. If he can get it right, can throw a bunch of innings, just kind of be a workhorse. So, you know, the ceiling's there. The floor is also there for both Tyler Jay and Kyle Cody, that if nothing really works for them, they're still major league pitchers. And I think Kyle Cody will be that. There's just a little bit longer for him to go.
All right. And then in the next two rounds, and then after this, we'll kind of just look for some gems. But the next two rounds, the Twins took a couple of prep third basemen, Travis Blankenhorn and Trey Cabbage. So
yeah,
it sounds like these guys have power for days, and that's their calling card.
Yeah, and that's, you know, as I followed the draft, obviously I was around for the first 2 days. I had to work the third day, so I was just kind of keeping tabs on that, but wasn't able to watch it too close. The high upside power was kind of the theme, and it's kind of been the theme for the last handful of years. From what I understand, both Blankenhorn and Cabbage have a pretty nice swing from the left side, are both projectable, but will be corner guys. And at this point, I think they're, you know, they both play a lot of shortstop in high school. They're good athletes. Cabbage, I don't know if you saw the clip of him busting a rim in a basketball game. Blankenhorn, too, is a three-sport guy, and they're real good athletes, but, you know, if nothing works out for them, they have the power potential to fit in the corner at third base because they're athletic. If that doesn't work, you know, that you might see them go the way of Travis Harrison, where they end up in the outfield. And, you know, I haven't followed up with either of Blankenhorn's or Cabbage's high school coaches, but they both, you know, rave about them and say, you know, they're going to be players. They have the work ethic. And a lot of times you get those high school guys that you're not sure how they're going to react to their first big paycheck. And, you know, I'm more curious about how they'll be used this summer. I'd assume they'd both go to the GCL. And at that time, you're not going to play your guys every day. They have Sundays off in that league. So one guy will probably play third base on Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And the other guy will play third base on Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. And they'll get sprinkled in at DH a little bit. But both of those guys are going to be, again, power dudes. They're, you know, they have pop in the bat, but they're high upside guys, and they could stick there. And, you know, if it works out 5-6 years down the line and you have two guys that are knocking on the door and you have to figure out what to do with them, that's not a terrible issue. And it sounds like they're both going to be pretty signable like the rest of the guys in the top 10. So, you know, it was interesting for me that they went prep shortstop, going to be a third baseman at 80. Prep shortstop, going to be a third baseman at 110. And maybe, you know, they give him a shot to stick at shortstop. Doesn't seem like that's real likely, but, you know, Miguel Sano was playing short when he made his professional debut too. So we might see some of those, see them get an opportunity at shortstop as they make their pro debuts here later this month.
All right. And then, so it sounds like you think they're both going to sign. I mean, but is that a concern? Are they Twins going to have to go over slot for these high school guys? I mean, certainly they could go to college and figure something out and improve their draft stock, but they could get close to $1 million anyways.
Right. That was one of the first questions I asked during the draft was, because pick six, this Chris Paul kid from Berkeley is a senior guy. And when you draft a senior that high, you know, the assumption is you're trying to get a discount on a guy so you can turn around and spend it on other guys that were overslot. And that was the first question I asked. I said, hey, Chris Paul's a senior, sign to get those two high school kids under contract, right? And the response I got was, I can't tell you that yet, which I get it.
Sure.
But at the same time, as that draft progresses, the Puerto Rican kid in the seventh round that doesn't have a real solid commitment anywhere. I think he's committed to a college, but he's got a backup JC, which tells me academically there's some issues. He's coming for slot. The eighth round pick, Colton Kendrick, as we're progressing to the, you know, diamonds in the rough, dude's a freak with power wise. And he would be the guy that I would be more concerned about needing to take some of that extra bonus money. And then you turn around and Lamonte Wade and Sean Miller, I don't know that they'll come in over slot. I can't imagine they're going to come in too far under slot. But between Paul and what you can maybe save a couple hundred thousand on Jay, I think they'll be able to get all those first 10 guys signed without huge issue. It sounds like this Camacho round 11, he should be able to get done, you know, without dipping into the bonus pool. Xander Wheel should be able to get done without dipping into the bonus pool. AJ Murray, I hear that he's like close to signing. He's going to go to E-Town, catcher from Georgia Tech. He's not going to dip into the pool. So I think they're going to be able to spend a little bit. You know, I guess my first instinct was this Colton Eastman, this kid from this prep kid from California. You know, they might turn around and try to get him. They might try to get this Kyle Wilson, the prep kid from Missouri. If they can dip into that pool to pay over $100,000. So, you know, my concern is not anybody in the top 10. If you look at the history of the Twins draft picks, that Mazzilli kid didn't sign out of UConn a couple years ago. But other than that, they seem to get their top 10 done without a huge issue. And I think last year, round 19 was the first guy they didn't get done. So I'm not too concerned about signability in any of these guys.
Well, then, that will be good. It's always nice you sign those top 10 guys. That's where most of your talent is. And then after that, you're filling the roster of the minor league squads and then hoping that you get lucky somewhere else down the draft board. So who are some of the guys maybe that you liked or guys that you maybe thought, oh, this looks like a Twins guy. The Twins ended up with him, and maybe you're looking forward to see what he can do over the next 3 or 4 years, write about him in that handbook of yours.
Yeah, well, the name that stuck out to me right away were the two Puerto Rican guys that went on day two, or on day three, excuse me, and that's this Kirby Camacho. He's a catcher. You know, everything I've heard about him has been positive. Let me see. I can tell you a little bit. Smooth hitting, switch hitting catcher with a smooth left-handed swing. And then the other guy they have out of Puerto Rico is this Leon Marrero. And he was announced as a right fielder, but they think he can probably play some center field and also a really nice swing. The other thing about those two is they draft them with because of their bat, which as 17-year-olds, there was some book I read. I don't even know who read it, wrote it. It was a prospectus book a handful of years ago, but they did this study on high school guys and, you know, how old they are, where they come from. And basically the likelihood of hitting on a 19-year-old in high school was way, way, way lower than hitting on a 17-year-old. And these two Puerto Rican hitters that they drafted on day three are both 17 years old, this Camacho and Marrero. So they got them both where they thought they were going to get them, which to me tells me that there's not a signing issue. One was, what, round 11, round 17 or something. So I like those two. And really the theme of it is if you can add high ceiling guys and give them a chance in the system, the way that it's at, the system is, I wouldn't say it's full, you know, numbers wise, there's a lot of quality, but if you can get high ceiling guys that, you know, maybe pan out, maybe don't, you can do that when your system's as deep as the Twins is right now. You couldn't do it 5 years ago when the system was not deep. So take a chance on some of these guys. Those Puerto Rican guys, I think, are you know, they're two guys worth watching. But then they turn around, they balance that with some seniors. You know, this AJ Murray, they really like him, a catcher out of Georgia Tech. They think that, you know, that's what he can do. I heard a Mitch Garver comp on him. Xander Wheels, he's a good player. from Vandy, hit a home run off Tyler Jay in the Super Regionals. And then you get into more of the high school guys, guys that aren't necessarily gonna sign. And I'm still got some feelers on a lot of those guys, but a lot at that point it's kind of organizational depth. My guess is they probably signed 22 or 23 guys, which is less than last year. I want to say they signed 26 or 27. The 26th round pick actually was the son of an area scout, the Four Corners area scout that they have, and kid's name is Tyler Williams. He's a top 200 guy, committed to Arizona State, and he's not going to sign. And basically it was we're gonna take the kid, and 3 years from now we're gonna prove that we were right about him in high school, and that's kind of, you know, where it's at. Twins redraft a lot of guys. In fact, this year I don't know that they redrafted any guys, but that's a pretty typical thing that they do. So I think we're gonna maybe hear some of these names called next year if they don't get signed, or 3 years from now. But you know, I think this draft, the theme of it was getting power arms, getting power bats, and supplementing that with the high ceiling guys that they'll sign and send to the GCL and see what they can get from there. Because, you know, with Rochester as good as they are, and Chattanooga's, you know, killing it, Fort Myers isn't great, but Cedar Rapids is good without a lot of big names. And it's not that the Twins are young, but they have young pieces. So, I think that, you know, is in the history of me covering what the Twins have done in the draft, this is the best draft that they've had, and that's saying something, because they've had some pretty good drafts.
And would you say that's just based on really the depth? I mean, it doesn't seem like there's not a Byron Buxton in this group, but there's, you know, a bunch of guys that are going to find their way into that top 20. Prospect ranking, you know, for the next several years,
and not necessarily soon, you know, but they've drafted guys that have a chance to be there. You know, Tyler Jay, he's gonna be top five, top six, top seven in the Twin system. I can't even tell you with a straight face that Kyle Cody's gonna be a top 15 guy in the next couple years. Blankenhorn and Cabbage, you're not gonna turn around and say, well, those guys are top 15 and top 20 guys, but they all have an exceptional ceiling. And when you looked at, especially last year's draft, look at last year's draft and say there's ceiling on those guys, but there wasn't. It was Nick Birdie, college closer. Hey, Nick Birdie's a stud. But then they go college reliever, college reliever, college reliever, college reliever, college reliever, and you say, wait a minute, there's not a lot of ceiling. There's potential, but when you draft a college reliever that doesn't have, Tyler Jay is an exception to this rule because he's got four pitches. You draft a college reliever and there's not a lot of ceiling there. There's potential for you to, hey, we can maybe make this guy a starter, but that's not, he has a ceiling to be a mid rotation guy. You know, his ceiling is he could be a back end guy, but if that doesn't work, he's going to be a bullpen guy. And when you take seven of those guys in the top 10, but that's not a good draft. I mean, even if you get Nick Gordon, who could be an all-star shortstop, the ceiling on the guys they draft in the top 10 rounds, Tyler Jay, Kyle Cody, Blankenhorn, Cabbage, even Robinson, I mean, his ceiling is a lefty specialist, and that's their fifth pick. And they didn't get one of those in the top 10 rounds last year when they were drafting all college relievers. Does that make sense where I'm going there?
Yeah, certainly. Yeah. I mean, it sounds like there's a lot of guys that we're going to want to keep tabs on. We might forget about them for a couple of years, and especially, you know, Buxton and Snow are going to come up, and, you know, we're going to watch some of those other guys, because the Twins have a lot of guys now that are close, but these guys should kind of be that next wave and certainly have the potential to be the next part of a next big group the Twins have as part of their system.
And even Colton Kendrick, the eighth round pick, he's got power that if he gets drafted by, you know, name a team, he's probably got the most raw power in their system. I mean, by default. He doesn't have that with the Twins. You know, there's Sano. There's obviously Adam Brett Walker. Kendrick's got crazy power, but he's going to be down there with Lewin Diaz, he's going to be down there with those types of guys that you're not even thinking about him. And all of a sudden, you're going to check a box screen and you're going to say, wait a second, who's this guy down in the Appy League that's crushed 19 home runs? Oh, his name's Colton Kendrick. He was an eighth round pick. I don't even remember him. Where 5 years ago, when Rosario does that, it's like, hey, let's move this guy up and see what he can do. So that's kind of the nice thing about the system is there's all this room. I mean, there's not a lot of room, but there's all these players that can fit into these spots that we're recognizing. Like you said, we should probably keep some tabs on these guys because Blankenhorn and Cabbage, they're going to be exciting guys to follow, but Kendrick, an eighth rounder, he's not far behind. And then you have those three Puerto Ricans that are going to take a while. Like Jorge Fernandez has taken a while. But 3-4 years down the line when they're busting into A-ball and it's like, wait a second, who are these guys? They're 20 years old and they're playing well. You know, they have ceiling. And obviously all of these guys are not going to pan out, not work well. I remember a few years ago, Nick Lockwood was a shortstop picked in like the 13th round. I'm like, hey, that's a heck of a pick. Well, he never made it out of short season ball. And that's how some of these guys are going to be too. But as far as high ceiling guys, the potential to be this, you know, I said earlier, this is the best draft they've had. This has the potential to be the most helpful draft that they've had. And that's saying something when you have a team that's playing well. But more importantly, having AAA and AA teams playing really well.
All right. Well, Jeremy, let me ask you this then. Besides Tyler J., who is going to be the guy that first suits up for the Minnesota Twins?
The first guy that makes it to the major leagues out of this draft class. Alex Robinson, I think, has a pretty good shot of doing that. The lefty out of Maryland. He could fit that role that Tyler J could ultimately, fill this year. Robinson was bound to be a really, really high pick and then just kind of slip late in the year and fell to where he did, but hard-throwing lefty that could be an eighth-inning guy. And you know, if he can be in that current Aaron Thompson role in 2 years, maybe 2.5 years, he'll move quicker than Melitakis. I don't know that he'll even get the opportunity to start. He would be a guy that could definitely move fast. And this Chris Paul kid from California, the Twins took him as a senior, will pay him as a senior, but I think they like him a little bit more than most seniors. Dude's a pretty good athlete. Dude hits well. He could be a guy that all of a sudden pops up kind of like Nate Roberts did, and you're like, wait a second, where'd this guy come from? And he was a senior sign. He's a guy that I've been told he's someone that you guys should be excited about. And I just, when I saw it, I thought, well, he's a guy that's going to save some money so we can get these other guys down. So Chris Paul could be a guy that in the event that there's an outfielder needed, he could show up. The question you asked, though, is tough when there's so much quality, in AAA and AA. Like, where's there going to be a need? Is there going to be a need in the outfield? I hope not, right? Buxton shows up, Rosario's around, Arcia figures it out, Hunter's still around, Hicks, where's another outfielder going to fit? You know what I mean? So I would guess, if I had to say the next guy behind Tyler J to put on the Twins jersey, I'd guess Alex Robinson because he's left-handed and throws hard, and you can always find a spot for them.
Okay, then probably the most important draft question, and we'll get you out of here with this. Who's got the best name of these 40 kids the Twins picked up?
The best name? Well, if you walk out of a draft with a Kirby as a Twins fan, that's a pretty good thing, right?
That's pretty good.
I'd have to go with Kirby.
It's Rich Condilis? Is that how you say it? The 36th rounder out of Pittsburgh?
Yeah. Condilis. You like that name?
It seems like Ricky Condilis could be a guy.
Give me a second and I'll give you a good scouting report on Condilis. Maybe not good, but let me figure
out something.
where he went to. He went in, he's an East Coast guy. I gotta figure this out here.
What kind of resources are you digging through over there?
Dude, I have so much stuff to go through, you wouldn't even believe it. Which reminds me, there might be, and I'm saying might because I've been drinking an awful lot lately, but there might be an old mid-season. You know how we do the Prospect Handbook? Because you write in it, right?
Yep, I know about it.
So we're in some talks that maybe there'll be a little mid-season draft handbook. Because I'll tell you what, E-Rolf, Twins Daily, they're not paying my bills. You know what I mean?
I hear you.
So if I have all the stuff, I could dump it for free and you guys can read it and you can comment and say, hey, good job, Jeremy. Way to go. Or I can talk to my buddy Seth and we'll just sell it. You know what I mean?
Of course. Yeah. I would definitely pay a couple shekels to get the scouting reports on all these guys prior to the handbook next year.
I'm talking $2.99 and a format that will make you drool. That's what I'm talking about. Let me tell you about this Cordillas guy that you love.
Any chance he goes by Ricky? That's the first thing.
He doesn't go by Ricky. In fact, from what I'm told, he goes by a much better name. He actually goes by Jeremy.
What?
No, I don't know. I think that's just how the email works.
Oh, Jesus.
Guy sends me an email. He says Jeremy. No, I'm assuming whatever it says on the draft page, that's what he goes by. Is it Ricky?
I got Rich Candilas, yeah.
Yeah, he's rich. Anyway, he's 6'5", 225. And guess what he throws? He throws gas. He throws mid-90s. And he closed for Pitt this year. But he's got the intangible on him. You know, he gets the six tool for the intangible because he's a competitor. He's got the bulldog closer mentality. But the other thing that the Twins love and that what they've been doing lately is they take these guys that don't have a lot of mileage on their arms, like this Candilas guy, and then they try to figure out what he can throw. So they'll get him down there, and my guess is that they'll say, okay, here's a fastball. What do you throw for a breaking pitch? Let's see it. And now let's see if you have a changeup. And they'll let him throw that in some games like they did with Ethan Mildren. He's your guy, right, Ethan Mildren?
Oh, yeah, the Ethan Mildren fan club, one and only right here on Talk to Contact.
So Mildren was actually, he started for Pitt and got a chance to do that. And, you know, I think since pretty recently he's been moved into Fort Myers bullpen, right?
Yep.
I would guess that Candilas will get a shot to start. And, you know, if he demonstrates he doesn't have three pitches, yeah, they'll move him back into the bullpen. But he's a guy that it looks like they could sign relatively, maybe not relatively easily, but a guy that's signable if it gets to the point that they want to add him. The issue is that in the 36th round, that's organizational at best. But he's a guy that you know, there's potential when you can throw at 95. You just don't know how it's going to work out for the previous 35 picks because they ain't signing 36 guys. You know what I mean?
Oh, sure.
I want to say that he has some eligibility left. Yeah, he has a year eligibility left at Pitt. So, you know, maybe he's at the point where he's thinking, I could do better. I was going to go higher. I don't believe he showed up on any top 500 chart, so you know, it kind of has to do then with the relationship with the area scout and how that works. Yeah. But
when he goes back as a senior, then he has no leverage next year. So,
right. To a point, because there are some guys that have been so good as seniors that they bought themselves leverage. And I don't know how much did you watch the draft? How much did you listen to that?
I didn't listen to any of it. I didn't get into it this year. Couldn't do it.
Because there was Jonathan Mayo said a few times, he talked about senior draft picks that aren't necessarily senior signs. And basically, you know, they earn themselves a spot where they can say, you know, I deserve this. or I'm going to go, you know, I don't know what they'll do if they'll, you know, play for the Saints, something. But you can get yourself to a point where you have a little bit of leverage. Obviously, there's a lot of seniors that'll be signing this week for $1,000. And that's pretty standard for seniors. You know, we're going to draft you in the sixth round. You can say you're a sixth round draft pick. We'll give you $1,000 and guys jump on it. But that's the thing. It's like, how much is he going to get as a 36th rounder when the bonus pool's dried up? How much do the Twins want him? What are his opportunities going to be in the system? You know, I looked at him and he wasn't a name that jumped out at me as someone that would sign. I think he is signable if they want to go after him. But at the same time, you know, a right-handed guy that throws in the mid-90s, where is he going to slot into the organization? Would he be better off going back for a year? And that's kind of the things that not only he has to weigh, but his advisor and, you know, the area scout have to weigh too. So, but that's your favorite name of all the names, Rich Condilis.
Rich Condilis, I like it. Yeah, it was him or Blake Cederlund, I think, was my other guy. It looks like he was a JUCO in the 22nd round.
Yeah, and I don't really have anything on him yet, Blake Cederlund. So,
all right, well, I picked a good one then. It's my guy, Rich Condilis.
I hope you can just turn this this love affair with the Pitt Panthers, you know, into something marketable where you become like their mascot or something.
Yeah, maybe I'll have a Pitt Panthers Twins prospect handbook that you could buy in a couple of weeks.
I'll buy it for 99 cents.
Oh, no, 9 cents. What? I probably sell half a million of them.
Is that how negotiations work?
Yeah, I just drive the price down until everyone buys it.
Oh, I mean, then it's free. It's fine.
Well, I can't go that cheap.
So, yeah, I, you know, if you just said, give me a couple words about the whole draft, I'd say it's full of power. It's full of high ceiling guys. There's a chance that they could miss on a lot of them. But there's also a chance that you could get some superstars that weren't necessarily high draft picks. And I think that's an exciting draft to have. And it also gives you a reason to watch the GCL and the Appy League affiliate, the E-Town Twins, too. So it'll be interesting. They'll see, especially to see when these guys start coming to terms, how it all fits into their signing bonus. If they can steal some of these high school guys that they took, Kyle Wilson and Colton Eastman in the late teens and early 20s.
And when's the deadline? When do we got what's the date we're watching on the calendar when these guys got to be signed up or shipped out?
I believe, the date, it has something to do with July 15th. I want to say this year it's the 17th, which is a Friday. But we're talking about 5 weeks. I want to say it's July 17th. It changes every year. But they got to get that done. It's like 5 p.m. that afternoon. I don't think the Twins will go down to the wire on any of their top 10 picks. But if they have some extra money, that they might come down to the wire just trying to, you know, throw a couple hundred thousand at a guy if they have that left. But I would anticipate in the next couple of days, we're going to start hearing about some of the later, you know, the teens guys getting signed, reporting. Tyler J shouldn't be too long. It wouldn't shock me if he was done by Monday or Tuesday next week. So, you know, it should be an exciting time. And then you got the J2 period coming up here in a couple of weeks. And the Twins are going to be pretty active in that too with their $4 million bonus baby that they're going to sign. And they're going to have to acquire some more money. So they're going to have to be, you know, active in that trade market as well.
Great. Well, Jeremy, we'll check in with you in 5 weeks or so, and we'll find out all about these guys that signed. Thanks for coming on tonight. And what's going on with your podcast?
Well, here's the deal. You should talk to Seth.
Is it officially dead yet? Well, you keep on saying that. Talk to Seth.
I thought we were dead. I thought we were dead. I thought it was done. And he just gets this burning in his loins to podcast. And I thought we were going to try something a little bit different. And he... You know, he was on board with it. I told him I can do it. He'll listen to this and he'll be like, yeah, he won't know what happened because I don't know what happened. But we had kind of talked about it my schedule's a little bit more busy now. I'm coaching baseball and softball three nights a week and writing the minor league report on the day as I don't coach. So I'm not willing to call it officially dead. I'm not sure what I'm willing to call it. It's less dead now than it was last time we talked. If that works.
We're moving in the right direction.
But people need to listen and it needs to be something that we can do live and people can call in. And we think we had that working out for us, but then it's not, you know, to get those things, it's not necessarily free. And if no one's listening, it's costs money, then you got to find the people to pay for that. And then it's, you know, this giant cycle that just, you know, shits on you, you know, over and over and over again.
Sure, I hear you. Well, I'll throw my shekels in the ring if you need advertisers. I'll sponsor the first episode.
You better talk to Seth. He might just like that. He thought he had an in. I thought it was going to happen. He was going to get like $500 and it was going to be this, you know, this big deal with fireworks and shit. But I think someone told him no. So I don't know. When he listens to this tomorrow morning, then he can, you know, tweet us all and tell us what's going on. I'm just as in the dump as you are.
Seth, you can contact my business agent, my advisor, and we'll talk about sponsorship for at least one episode.
One episode.
Hang out and talk Twins.
And you know how we start those out, right?
Wake up, Twins territory.
Do it better than I can.
That's pretty good. All right, Jeremy, thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Well, that's going to do it for us this week on Talk to Contact. Thanks to Jeremy Nygaard from TwinsDaily.com and of the Minnesota Twins Prospect Handbook. He writes that along with our own Cody Christie and Sestos every week for giving us the draft rundown. I'm E. Rolf Pleiss for Talk to Contact saying, go Hoyas.